Yeah, welcome to the Friday catch-up. We brought an old friend back today. You'll hear a bit of this.
That is horrific.
Why are you going to be hearing that?
Because we were reading text messages from an All Black who should have known better.
Yes, they've been released, Aaron Smith in the toilets at the airport. It's nice reading the text messages between him and his extra marital
fling
friend.
Yeah, open fling. Toilets are handy, aren't they, for sex by the sound of it, because there's all sort of handholds, it's safe in there.
There's an alarm, just
plenty
in case.
Of room.
Yeah, there you go. Also, we had an amazing eyewitness account from the terrorist attack in Barcelona from an Australian woman who's there.
Yes, we did. And Marto made his bold Bledisloe Cup prediction, which I am sure will not come back to bite him.
For the 16th year in a row, it'll be wrong.
Keeping the faith.
Enjoy the catch-up.
It is on the front page of every single newspaper in the country. If you missed it yesterday, let's talk you through what happened with Pauline Hanson. She walked into federal parliament in an outfit. This is what the speaker said.
I'm just going to reflect on the mode of dress that Senator Hanson is using.
She was wearing a burqa, and this is what Pauline had to say.
I'm quite happy to remove this because this is not what should belong in this parliament.
But it upset a number of the senators, including Queensland Senator and Attorney General George Brandis.
To ridicule that community, to drive it into a corner, to mock its religious garments is an appalling thing to do. And I would ask you to reflect on what you have done.
Order. I think we should get her in the town square and stone her at 12 o'clock today and cut three of her fingers off.
Anything for it.
Okay, but here's my question. Are you offended by it?
I laughed my head off when she walked in. Now, she walked across the back, then sat down. That's the funniest thing that's ever happened in the Senate.
What? And when she ripped it off and she had her hair was all out of place.
That was funny.
She couldn't work out what she wanted to say.
And she wasn't. Still talks
she couldn't
like
get
that.
Couldn't get her notes right. It's a stunt. It's a political stunt.
We're talking about Pauline Hanson. She has been. She knows there's going to be an election soon. She wants her party to get elected. She wants people to say her name a lot. We're saying it. That's all this is about.
I know that.
Don't be offended.
Don't get into
the queue to be offended.
I'm not in a queue. I just feel
everyone wants to be offended.
No, this is not one of those times that I'm just getting on the bandwagon of being offended. I just don't think federal politics is the place to take the mickey out of something that means so much to so many people.
What is it that means so much?
But it's okay, so if she had walked in strapped to a cross and then...
Funny as. If she walked in as the Pope, I would have laughed my head off. Funny as.
Okay.
If she would have had a Jewish one of those little caps on. Yeah. That's funny.
Okay.
Pauline, you're a fool.
Okay.
Let's not forget that she's just doing a revision of her old material.
Yeah.
Her old material, if this was 20 years ago, she would have come in with one of those little triangle hats pulling a rickshaw, because her old one was that Asians are taking over Australia, and now she's gone away, come back, going, oh, didn't that work, but not for as long as I needed it to. Oh, I know what I'll do. That's her act. This is her act.
Yeah, like George Brandis was really upset. But this is personally offending group of Australians, and I find that wrong.
Now, that's why I'm saying you're in the very big queue. That Senate, the Greens leader, what's his name? He had a go there, lady. I see you didn't play that. He wanted to be first.
We can play
and the head of everyone wanted to be first to abuse her, but George Brandis, he abused her really well,
and that's
what you just played. He got a standing ovation.
Guys are treating it like it was some orchestrated play that we're now just watching.
Do you really think any Muslim person has watched that and gone, oh, that evil woman? They just go, that woman's a clown.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. Okay, on Twitter, our former Prime Minister... our former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has said, and I quote, "How to create a race problem in Australia, that's not surprising him saying that, which prides itself on racial harmony. You do stupid, self-indulgent shit like this."
I never want to hear Kevin Rudd's name mentioned.
That's what he said.
I'll leave the studio before you mention his name. I can't cop
that
bloke.
The former Prime Minister...
of Twitter.
Okay. He just swore, which I actually think is quite unusual for a former Prime Minister of Australia.
Don't go there, because he swore more than any other human in Australia.
Okay, Michael of Jimboomba.
Check it out.
Morning, everyone.
What did you think of it?
What do you think, Michael?
I am offended. I'm not a Muslim, but I think everyone here is exactly what the burqa is about. The burqa is about modesty. So what you're saying is that, well, what Pauline Hanson is saying is what you think is a joke, that people should be able to come into Parliament and just rip off whatever clothes they want and flash what they want. Now, Marto, I'm sure you reckon that's going to be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Except it's not about people choosing to do it. You'd say if people want to do that, that's fine.
Yeah.
What they're saying is they're forcing this upon people. So forcing people to not wear the burqa. Would you be happy if people were forced to have to go into Parliament or have to go around the place and flash a lot more than they're willing to show?
But we already have laws about what people can and can't wear, Michael. You can't walk. You're not allowed to walk down the street naked. It's called public indecency.
That's a
mute argument. And to understand how and why people wear it, that's the first place to start, which she doesn't or claims to, but doesn't really. It's a stunt. It's just a cheap stunt, Michael.
So her name gets mentioned. Don't be outraged by it, everybody. It's okay.
Okay, Michael, thank you.
I'd rather somebody started the discussion. Why don't any females in Australia stand up and go, I want to fight for Muslim women? Why do they have to? Do you know it doesn't say in the Quran that you need to cover your face?
No,
do
but
you
know that? Yeah, but they choose to.
No, they're told to by their husbands. Can somebody, and I'm a supporter of white ribbon, etc. There is an element of that that needs to be investigated.
That's a gross generalisation.
One woman in Australia to stand up and go, these women are being sincerely affected by the Islam and their code. They are forced. They're the last bastion of women that haven't been empowered. Why don't you do it?
Because I don't agree with you. That
you don't
is
have
just
the courage.
Rubbish.
No woman has the courage to stand up for Muslim women.
You have no right to say that. RJ of Crestmead, what do you reckon?
No, don't tell me right. I'm not going to back away from this. I want to know why one woman in Australia doesn't stand up for Muslim women and say, stop it. We have power. We have responsibility now. Every other woman in Australia, apart from Muslim women, are given a fair go.
RJ of Crestmead.
Morning, Marto. 100% agree, mate. You're on the ball. Now, what is everyone missing on this? It's got nothing to do with her ridicule the Muslims or putting them down or being racist. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with the fact that a burqa, right, anyone can be under that. Anyone can walk into a place with a burqa on, does not have to remove it because people are scared that it will offend them and it'll ridicule them. But the point is, and she's making a very valid point, when you walk into a bank or anything like that, being a Muslim lady or a Muslim woman, you don't have to remove your burqa because people, like I said, are scared to be called racism. Anyone could be under that burqa, and that's what she's trying to make a point of.
But she didn't, though, RJ. If she was going to do that, then it should have been someone else. But she's not making that point because if she was trying to make that point, she told them it was her on the way in. By the way, it's me. So she's not making that point. She's just like, if she was going to do that, she should have at least done it properly, which is have somebody else underneath there, go to sit at her seat in the Senate, whip it off. It's not her. Hey, look, this is the problem.
It's Fatty Vorton.
Fatty Vorton.
What I don't understand is how... what's his name, Georgia, that got offended and nearly cried. Like, harden up, mate. You're an Australian, for God's sake.
He was offended, RJ. Everyone has a right to their opinion.
If you know the history of what goes on in the Middle East, a lot of the terrorists are wandering around hiding in women's clothes because you can never say, I want to see who's under there. You cannot touch them.
But the percentage of Muslim people who are terrorists is tiny. So why are we now annihilating a whole religion because we're frightened?
Who said we were annihilating a whole religion?
You're standing there and saying, why aren't women supporting Muslim women about wearing the burqa?
Well, mine's a different point, though. I'm saying about the empowerment of Muslim women. They lack any real power apart from inside their house. Outside their house...
According to you, Adam of Browns Plains, what do you reckon?
Well, I have 2 points. The first thing was about George Pandas. So, you know, he stood up, he chastised Pauline, and his point was, you know, you're mocking their religion. Now, my understanding, I'm happy to be proven wrong, was that the burqa is a cultural item. It's not actually, like you were saying before, it's not in the Quran.
It's not in the Quran to wear it.
It's not part of their religion. It's a cultural choice to wear that. Now, that aside, Pauline Hanson, I mean, now she stood up and said, oh, you know, I could have been anyone coming in here. No one knew who I was. But then you had the Speaker of the House who actually said afterwards... She actually identified herself to us before she came in here, so she's a liar.
Yeah, exactly. The stunt just didn't work.
It was a stupid stunt.
The stunt didn't work, Adam. It had to be someone else underneath. Just it's the base point of the stunt. If you're going to do it, it had to be someone else underneath, because otherwise her point's completely invalid, because she told everyone who she was when she walked in.
Thank you for all your calls. We did poll them. 55% of you support what Pauline Hanson did in the Senate. So that's very, very interesting.
Huge story on the eve of the Bledisloe Cup, which is tomorrow night, Australia versus New Zealand. The biggest story in New Zealand involves their halfback. He'll be running on for them, Aaron Smith. He was caught in the disabled toilets at Christchurch Airport last year and it got shut down. He got suspended for one game for being in there with a young lady who wasn't his girlfriend who... Anyway, she's come out and she says she's been highly disrespected and they've tried to make her sign a false document. She's actually a lawyer as well as a champion boxer, this girl. So she is finally having her say. And she was, here's some of her about what went on.
As soon as I got to the bathroom, things did turn sexual.
Ooh.
Sexual?
See, Erin's going, we were just in there having a chat. Hey.
Yeah, and his excuse was that he asked that she asked him to come in. This is into a toilet in the airport to discuss her boyfriend troubles, and that proved incorrect. That was one of his excuses. But I believe the transcript of their text messages between them each other from their courtship in 2014, right up until after.
Well, it all started. You know, he's playing down in Dunedin, right at the bottom, and she's at the gym training to go to the Olympics. Hopefully, as a boxer.
Saw me at the gym. I thought he was a really nice guy. I'm really into my sports. He's obviously really into his sports. We just connected on that level.
Obviously.
On that level.
So Erin's got her phone number and here's the first text back in 2014.
Well, very quickly.
Yeah.
We have had to redact some of this script because it is a bit too raunchy.
Oh, I wonder what we're going to say when it's a swear word.
When it's a rude word, we're going to go with...
That is horrific.
That is horrific.
Well, it's okay at the start. Back in 2014, it was simple. It was seeing you at the gym a couple of times. Probably don't know me, though. I'm Erin. Mate, you're the New Zealand halfback. I think she's aware of what you're up to.
Robin,
and then she hit
say?
Back.
What,
oh, mate.
What did she say? Robin, what did she say?
Mato won't tell me where he's at so that I can give the responses.
Just read any of them.
Any of it.
Go from the front.
Okay.
Read that so that I can do the next bit.
Everyone close your eyes. Oh, don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes if you're driving. This is the Aaron Smith. Mato playing the part of Aaron Smith. Robin playing the part of lawyer aspirant.
Oh dear, this is rude.
From the gym
scene.
Well, we've got it. We've got a cover.
Okay, here's Aaron. I know what you're doing now. Won't you come give me a good quick luck?
That is horrific.
And?
Lol.
That is horrific.
Yeah, there's two things he wanted. Double. He wanted two things. A good luck, and it rhymed with both of them. Amazing. So what did she say?
Lol. Don't you have a girlfriend?
Oh, that's very good.
And then Erin says, no, be quick. I got to go soon.
Or, nah. Nah. If you got to go soon.
That's good.
Come on.
Just catch up with another time.
All goods. Why do you think I have a girlfriend?
And then we lose the next bit.
Oh, my God. This is unbelievable.
Get to the raunchy stuff.
Bit. Where's the bit?
It's the next bit.
Yeah, the next bit is about...
the good stuff.
Where's the park bit?
The next page. I'm alone for a couple of hours. There you go. Look.
Yeah. Oh, is that mine?
No, you go, hey, I'm
I've
just
lost that
in my
page.
Way. Oh, for God's sake.
What are you up to tonight or now? Yeah, here we go.
Okay, right.
Hey, you. What are you up to tonight or now?
Hey, I'm just in my way home. What about you?
Oh, I'm alone for a couple of hours. Would you come to the park opposite my house for a...
That is horrific.
Come to the park.
I know.
I'm free.
Who doesn't do it in the park?
Give her the right
reply,
till
eight.
Please.
Okay.
Come on.
I'm free till 8. Come on.
No, that's me. Oh, this is hopeless. Ed, you're aware
of
disgrace.
You can read the full transcript.
Oh, I've got a photo of her in a bikini. It's a great New Zealand love story. That's what it is.
Ed, do you know what that whole reenactment was?
That is horrific.
Yes, the whole thing. It is.
Tragically, the death toll is mounting and the number of injuries with a van slamming into pedestrians in Barcelona. And now we're going over to Barcelona to speak to a witness. A young lady from Melbourne, Susan McLean. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Okay, so you were there. What did you see?
Yeah, we were about 100 metres away from the Stade Los Ramblas, which is where the van first went down the pedestrian area. We were in an adjacent street, also a pedestrian street, right up near Place de Catalunya. And all of a sudden, there was this tidal wave of people running towards us. They were running for their life. They were screaming. They were crying. Many were hysterical. Children were crying. And we immediately realised something terrible had happened.
So you know how there's the mall and on either side there's a roadway going one way and the other side of the mall the roadway's going the other way? Was he just ploughing, or were they ploughing just straight up the centre?
Yes, so it was down that middle part. So as you described, there's the two normal footpaths on either side. Then there's a small lane of traffic, one way in each direction, and then there's that large middle part.
And Susan, from what is going on in Barcelona right now, are there police everywhere? Is there a huge security presence? Are they telling people to stay inside? What's happening?
Yeah, they're telling people to stay inside. We've been in our hotel since 45 minutes after this happened. We haven't left. The warnings are to still stay inside. Obviously, they don't want all of Barcelona around a crime scene. But just on the news now, they're saying that the driver of the van has not been arrested. The two people that they've arrested were not the driver of the van. So that person is still on the run. It's eerily quiet. Barcelona is a very noisy city normally. Since we've been back in the hotel, really the only sounds we've heard are police sirens and the helicopter. Probably 20 minutes ago, there was a whole lot of sirens again. They've quietened down. But yeah, it's quite scary. You know, we're safe. We're very lucky. We're one of the lucky ones. There's a lot of people that are not so lucky tonight.
But Susan, you're explaining that this tsunami of people are running to you and people are hysterical and there's children. I mean, what is your reaction? Did you turn around and run with them? Did you feel that you were at risk? How did you feel in that moment?
We didn't. All I could think of was that there's been a terrorist attack. That was my initial thought. I didn't think anything else. It was just, oh my God, there's been a terrorist attack. I didn't know what it was. Clearly it wasn't an explosion or gunshots because we didn't hear any of that. And we basically, I was with my husband, we got separated momentarily for about 4 minutes, so that was quite scary. But we were sort of pushed into a shop and then they pulled the shutters down and we stayed there.
Wow.
To give it some perspective, just so that people know, and one of the things that people don't always realise is they don't understand how people can't get out of the way. That's a normal reaction. But if the vehicle is travelling at 80 kilometres an hour, which is what they're saying this vehicle was, that means it's travelling at 22 metres per second.
Whoa.
So that's...
You can't get out of the way of that.
...that this vehicle was travelling. You can't. And this is what a lot of people don't understand, is they think, oh, I would see the van coming and I would run.
Yeah.
But at 22 metres per second, you know, your reaction time, by the time you've looked up, you know, it's upon you.
16 dead, more than 100 people injured. It's extraordinary. Had you put any thought into terrorism before you went on your European holiday?
My background is law enforcement. I was 27 years in Victoria Police.
I believe we've spoken to you before about cyber safety. So, yes, Susan, you are well-versed in what can go go on in the world.
But Susan, because you're a law enforcement officer, did you want to push forward and have a look at the scene?
No, because it was clear that the police were there. There was clear that something was going on. You know, I was going to be a little help to anyone at that point in time. You know, if you're in the middle of danger, you're going to act, but you don't need to run around the corner really and see what's going on.
Righto.
It was just interesting that so many people, and I've seen the footage, which I don't know that you'll get over there because some of it's horrific. People walking through the aftermath, filming the dead bodies.
Oh, I can't stand that.
Not help, not doing anything. It was disgusting.
And yeah, that is disgusting.
My husband said the same thing. Why is someone's first thought is to grab your phone and film? That's concerning. We think of terrorism. I thought of it before our holiday. You're aware of it. You don't ever believe you're going to be caught up in it.
Yeah.
No. Well, Susan McLean, that is the reality. Susan McLean, eyewitness from Melbourne and eyewitness to the Barcelona attack. Stay safe. Thank you for speaking to us.
It's my pleasure.
The next billion seconds are the most important in human history as technology transforms the way we live and work. The smartphone, barely a decade old, has given billions access to information and capacities they've never had before. It's changing what we can do, and it's changing the shape of the future. So what does that future look like? Hi, I'm Mark Pesce, the host of The Next Billion Seconds, a new show on Podcast One. Join me as I speak to some of the brightest minds shaping that world, the people who are spending their lives forming that future. We'll hear about their work in helping shape those next billion seconds. Listen at podcastone.com.au or on the Podcast One app.
I got a situation at my house. My beautiful wife, Tiff, is pregnant, very, very pregnant. She's carrying her bump around a little bit to assist herself. And
she's uncomfortable, poor Pops.
Uncomfortable is exactly the right word, Robin. Poor little bear is very uncomfortable. And she keeps saying that, I'm uncomfortable. She's happy, but she's uncomfortable. And at night, I go to bed early, obviously, and she is having a lot of trouble sleeping because the baby is kicking in the night. And then she's also had a bit of acid reflux, which causes her to make like this noise, like that sort of
thing. I can remember this.
it's quite a full-on noise. And it wakes me up. You know, she'll go, and I'll wake up in the middle of the night, you know, 2:30, 1:30. And as you know, from people who get up early for work, you're just tired the next day and it gets you. And so I suggested the other night, perhaps maybe I could sleep in the other room just for a couple of days.
Oh, how did that go down?
Poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't go down that road.
I'm pregnant with your child. Yeah. You can't.
You did this to me.
This is just a prelude to when we actually have a baby. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to rub my back and, you know, and she wakes me up to feel, she said, oh, the baby's got hiccups. She said this at 2:30 in the morning this morning.
The baby's got hiccups? I've never heard that one before.
Well, she woke me up to feel the baby having hiccups. I'm like,
because your belly actually jumps. Like it can do. It's the weirdest thing.
Did you put your ear to there and hear it?
My hand. It was 2:30 in the morning, hand. And I could feel it. And I was like, oh, yeah, but I'm thinking now, as I came to work, I'm like, I didn't need to, you know, like, if the baby kicks at 1:30 in the afternoon, I can feel it then. You know, it's pretty similar action.
Now, I'm guessing she's asleep right now and can't hear any of this. But keep going.
No, I've texted her and she's not answering. So she's fast asleep. So do you do the separate beds? You know, separate beds, because I've always thought that it signaled the end of a relationship.
Yeah, I think it's a sad look.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, mate.
Okay, but you two are saying that as people who obviously haven't slept with a full-on snorer.
Oh, no, I've never slept with a snorer.
No, yeah. Neither have I.
So when you have, you'll know the value of a second bedroom.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but isn't it a bit sad when you you know, in the middle of the night, wake up, in the morning, wake up next to your partner?
If you perpetually want to be woken up because someone has a snoring issue or a baby bump fidgety leg thing.
But does it knock the relationship around? Is it?
I don't know. Well, it can do, but if you have an agreement, maybe you come together and then separate.
I know one couple and who sleep in separate beds because the female in the relationship wants to have the dog in the bed. And so she has the dog and he has the cat and they sleep in separate.
Wow.
But they're a story for another day. Mm. But the question is, can it work? Can separate beds in a relationship work? Because if I can take some evidence back to my wife, maybe I could get a little bit more sleep, or maybe I'm just being nasty and it's a terrible idea. Let us know. Have you had experience in the separate beds relationship situation? Does it work? Can it work, or is it a disaster? John from Bribie Island. Separate beds, my man?
Yes, obviously. I go to bed early and I snore very loudly, so my wife, when she comes to bed, wakes me up and I just go and sleep on the lounge.
On the lounge, John.
Been doing it for years.
But you must have your mould in the lounge, do you? Is it comfy? Because
yeah, it's very comfy.
Yeah, and that's the agreement you've come to, John. You can respect that being a snorer, that's problematic.
Yes, she needs her sleep, so I just get up and go and stumble on the lounge and go back to sleep.
Do you miss her though, John?
No, because I'm asleep.
Okay.
I love you, John. You're awesome.
That's not a bad point. When you're asleep, it doesn't matter.
No. There's no rejection if it's an agreed upon thing. Mick of Brackenridge, tell us, do you sleep in separate rooms?
We tried it once, but it was actually me who couldn't handle sleeping in the separate bed because I'm the one who's the loud snorer. But we just came up with the arrangement that let her go to sleep first and then just sneak in when she's asleep.
Oh,
that's really smart, Mick, and then it doesn't wake her. Now, Mick, you know, we've had two snorers in a row. If I was a snorer, I'm not a snorer. Is there any cure for snoring? Where's snoring at in the world at the moment? Is there a miracle cure anywhere?
I think there is.
There's a few things going, but I find if I sleep on my side or sleep on my stomach, I don't snore. But if I sleep on my back, I do.
Mm. Yeah, that flap in the back of your throat opens up.
Hey, Mick, that reminds me, actually, because I've got someone in my family that was a snorer, and they taped this, it's like a belt with a ball on it, and if you roll onto your back, it's annoying, so you roll back onto your side.
Yeah, go on your side or on your stomach, and it's better that way.
That's how you stop snorers, you just push them over.
My wife
punches me in the chest a lot.
I was going to say, it depends how long you've been doing it for to how violent the moving is.
Oh, God, having a snoring partner must be horrible. Oh, what have we got there? Is it Carly?
Yes, hello.
Carly from Bribie.
Separate rooms going, Carly?
Yes, it started with pregnancy, so I couldn't sleep, so I made him get out of the bed. And now it's moved on to I actually snore now, so he has to go into a separate room.
Now, why have you started snoring? It's because normally it's something you're born with. Why'd you start?
It came along with pregnancy, I haven't been able to get rid of it.
Well, can I check something? Now you're in separate bedrooms. Is that the last pregnancy that you've had? Have you had any more children?
Yeah, we've got two children.
Oh, good.
And one of them comes in and...
Oh, there's still some action.
And then it stays in the bed, so the poor husband gets turfed out all the time.
No, that's quite common, I reckon. Man. Hey, Carly, 30 to 50% of Australians snore.
30 to 50%?
Yep, that's the statistic I've just found.
Jeez, you're going all right to jag one who doesn't snore.
Yeah,
Dave is from Umanto. Dave, what's happening at your place, Dave? Separate beds?
Yeah, mate. Well, the missus is on the couch at the minute. She's 37 weeks pregnant. She's been on the couch for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, hold on, Dave. The police may want to investigate.
Is it sleep apnea where you can't, because she's got so much pressure and weight on her chest?
Yes.
She's just snoring pretty bad.
No.
Don't get me wrong. I feel horrible. I didn't want this. So I said I'd be the one to sleep on the couch. But she's wearing black and blue that she's fine and she gets me to bed.
No.
They're Robin, modern. Don't push
that. It's a modern relationship. Hey, Dave, maybe I could get my wife to sleep outside. What are you reckon?
Look, I'm not going to say go ahead and try to push her, but I do wake up feeling pretty bad every morning. But at least I'm getting me sleep. Yeah, so I'm going to work and make the money.
Dave, I just want to get a real fingerprint on who you are. Will you be getting up and helping with the breastfeeding?
If it's not too late at night, I don't have to start work too early.
Okay. Good.
That's big of you, Dave.
Cut from the same cloth as me, Dave.
No, hang on. Is this your first child?
It's my first, her third.
It may be your last, buddy.
Dave, I managed to not get killed, but I used to say, I don't have breasts, I can't help. Yeah, all right, he's going to use that.
Best of luck with your child, Dave. Marto and Robin, New Triple M.
Adam McDougall is the health hacker.
Health hacking is simply hacking into the tools, tricks, and routines of the healthiest, happiest, and most successful people in the world and applying these little tricks and routines into your own life. I'm a health hacker because I've been a professional athlete for 20 years, but I've also combined my experience as an athlete with my university studies, from economics to nutrition and sports science, with the practical application that I achieved as an athlete to help people hack into their health. In each episode, I'm going to share with you the tools, tricks, and routines of the healthiest, happiest, and most successful people in the world. You can hack into your own health and live a happier and healthier life.
The Health Hacker with Adam McDougall. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Okay, so Who magazine comes out on a Thursday, and this week's version has Tessa James and Nate Miles on the front cover. So I was kind of interested, flicking through, and I see this lovely photo of Ed's wife, Tiff, who is in full, ninja pose, but that's not right.
Taekwondo, her Taekwondo a uniform, the Dobok with her... fifth Dan black belt that she's got around her waist, looking very cute with her little baby bump.
What do you call that, though, when they go, ha, ready to challenge?
I don't know. You could ask her.
Well, we've got her on the line because she's saying some really interesting things like never punch someone in the face if you're being attacked. And I wanted to get some more info. Hey, Tiff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I love this stuff. It's so important to talk about it.
Well, Mata, you ask your fashion question first.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know when you line up against your opponent in karate or when you go...
Oh,
yeah.
Well, we wouldn't know what it is in karate, would we? Because it's taekwondo.
Yeah. Taekwondo.
Yelling.
What do you call it?
Yelling. In all martial arts, the yelling, it's called a ki-up. Ki-up. And it's obviously in a fight, you can intimidate your opponent. And in a self-defense situation, you're actually attracting attention in the yell. But most importantly, when you yell out, you tense your abs so you don't get winded in a fight.
Oh, good one. So if they slip one in under your ribs, you're ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're actually, whenever you kick or move in a fight, you're yelling and breathing out so you don't get winded. It's really important.
Okay. So, Tiff, here's the thing. I'm not trained in any sort of self-defense. And I guess in head, I've gone, if someone comes after me, I'm going to run like crazy.
Terrifying.
But you say things like, don't punch someone in the face because you could break your hand.
Yeah.
So what do you do if someone's grabbed you?
So for men and women, a lot of the mistakes I've seen, especially when I was younger and, you know, I'd go out to a club or a bar or something like that and you'd see little punch-ons on the street or whatever, I'd always see boys punching faces, and I just felt like going up to them and giving them my card and saying, oh, what are you doing, you know, because it's the number one mistake.
What a pickup line.
Yeah, just, you know, give me a call. Yeah.
Come on over, I'll teach you how to throat punch.
Yeah, because the face is really hard, lots of bones, your hands, your knuckles are really delicate. So the principle of self-defense is all that men and women need to know is hard weapon, soft target. Your body's made up of hard weapons, elbows, a finger to a soft target like your eye, a finger to your throat. The cartilage in your throat's really soft. So you get a hard fist to a soft target. A punch to the throat is really effective, especially for women with height disadvantages. You punch up into the throat really strong. They can't scream. It can break the cartilage there. It can be quite deadly, but in a self-defense situation, you have to remember that if you put your hands up, not in a guard, but open hands, I don't want any trouble, please leave me alone, you're alone, and then they're in your space and they're not backing down, and then they put a hand on you, then you know that you have to fight for your life. So I always say, punch the throat. Also for women, you hear, oh, just kick them in the nuts. But men attackers who are thinking about attacking a woman, perhaps they're a predator who have followed you to your car or something like that, and it's premeditated, they will be aware of the groin area. Every man is aware. So when they go to attack, say, a throat, they grab you by the throat so you don't scream. That's the most popular attack. They will twist their hips to protect that area. So you always want to go for the throat or a finger in the eye so that their eyes water, they can't see, you run. But if you are able to kick as a secondary attack, first attack to the face, then that brings the hips open, they're off guard. You don't just flick into the groin, you kick up and under with a straight leg really hard, and then you run. So, you know, even things like stomping on toes, if they attack you from behind and you get your heel and you stomp into their toes as hard as you can, if you're wearing a little heel, that's great. So you always just have to remember hard weapon on your body to a soft target, knee to groin, finger to eye, elbow to face, punch to throat, heel to soft toes. And, you know, that is the best way. That's all you need to know. And then if you're walking to your car, and I always do this, if it's late at night, it's dark, you're thinking, oh, what have I done? The car park is deserted. This is silly. I always get my keys out of my handbag so I'm not rumbling through my handbag at my car where it's dangerous. I always have my keys in my hand and I thread my keys through my knuckles. So that if anyone was to put a hand on me from behind, and especially pregnant, I am so nervous when I'm on my own, I just turn around, scratch them in the face. So, you know,
Tiff,
there's height disadvantages. Yes.
Has Ed ever surprised you and really paid for it?
No, but you know what? Because Eddie's 6'6", aren't you? 6 foot six?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. A bit shorter, but I appreciate
you're
6'5". That.
Yeah. Five. Anyway, doesn't Eddie's matter. So much taller than me. I'm 5 foot nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm always saying to Mr. Cavalli, please attack me because you're so much taller, I can really
good practice
on you.
Yeah, practice.
He refuses because he hates it when I give him an arm lock or a wrist
lock.
He's
not stupid.
He's a wuss. He complains.
Tiff, can I tell you what Ed's been doing while you've been talking? He has been pacing the studio. It's like
he gets nervous when I'm on the radio, I reckon. He thinks I'm going to say something.
I thought he was just being protective of you because he can hear these situations that he wouldn't actually like.
Yeah, he doesn't like it. And, you know, I think he's a bit nervous with me being pregnant. I don't feel fast or fit or confident in my pregnant body because, you know, even when I'm walking around, I always think about it. So it's something to keep in your mind. And when 1 in 5 women are attacked in their lifetime, it's high stats. You've got to be aware of it. But you don't need training. You just need common sense.
Okay. I know why he's really nervous, Ed. I know why you're really nervous, because it's 6:30 this morning. Tiff, we couldn't get you out of bed. But we were talking about should Ed and you sleep in separate beds until you have the baby.
Oh, don't.
That'd be what he's nervous about.
I'm a nightmare.
Yay! I've got you a hammock set up outside. All right, Dale, nice to speak to you, the founder of TiffXO.com. What a wonderful online fitness program that is. It's going gangbusters. I'll see you. Today's the day you're giving birth, so I'll see you at the hospital in about 25 minutes. See you soon.
Yeah, bring some vibe. Bye.
Bye.
Hold on. It's not, is it?
No.
Yeah, so we're getting induced in 25 minutes. That's why I've got to go after the show.
He is not.
I thought you were headed to a disabled toilet.
Too late for that.
Righto.
Come on, mate. This is what we do every year. And I love this. This is a special day. Robin, you haven't been here for this yet. It's a special day that we do. We call it Bledisloe, A New Hope. Yeah? Episode 4, A New Hope.
Let's ask Robin a quiz. Mm-hmm. How many years since Australia has won the Bledisloe Cup?
It'd be a lot.
Yeah, what?
2001.
Okay, it's 2017. I would consider 16 years to be a lot. I have a child who's, really just younger than that.
Imagine if you're from New South Wales and you're an Australian rugby fan. Your origin, you didn't win in 10 years and you haven't won. Anyway, this is
year.
What do I always say?
This is
the year. All right, I see.
Why?
For no other reason. No, they've got their hunger. They're actually fit. They haven't played. A lot of them haven't played. None of them have played for nearly 5 weeks now. They've been away getting fit. That's what they haven't been during this season. And they're really hungry and their attitude is correct. That's what attitude is everything in a body contact sport.
Attitude is everything with anything.
Good call. It sure is. And they're all hungry because they haven't won for a while. He's wiped the losers out. Checker's got rid of all the losers in the team. Well, I hope so. I'll reconfirm that on Sunday morning. The big one is, why wouldn't you get on them? They're paying $7. Now, of all the years I've been commentating, whenever you see a team that's not completely hopeless, and there are some hopeless teams that deserve to be $7 or plus with the bookies, if you ever see one, you've got to have a bet. As soon as it hits $6 in a two-horse race, you've got to have a bet on that horse, because eventually they've got to beat the All Blacks.
I do have two children that have been on this planet that have never seen the Wallabies beat the All Blacks.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, they beat them in the occasional test, I think, about 3 times in that period of time.
Okay.
But we can't beat them in a whole series. We're playing them 3 times this year. We're playing Sydney tomorrow. Then next week I've got to go to Dunedin, and then we're back in Brisbane at the end of in October.
Okay.
This is the year. We're beating Sydney, Brisbane. I don't mind if we don't win in Dunedin. Let them have a go. But Sonny Bill hasn't played for about 6 weeks. He's inside centre. And don't forget.
He's off.
Hang on. How much is New Zealand paying to win by over 20 points?
Oh, hold on.
Because that's what I'm on.
I think it's only like $2. They're $1.10 to win. Like, you know what that means. That means no one's giving Australia hope, and that's when we're boxed into a corner. That's when we'll come out punching. Mate, I've been involved in this. Eventually, you beat them. We went 4 years at one stage in the late 80s. Couldn't beat them. And then finally, we got them one day in Wellington. And then the next year, we won the World Cup.
Have you finished?
Yeah, well, that's sad. Yeah.
All right. You're confident. Put a full stop on it. Australia wins. What is the scoreline?
Oh, they'll win by 4-ish.
Australia by 4-ish.
Yeah. That's the Bledisloe. We'll be watching Saturday night at the Normanby. But, Marto, it's a huge weekend of rugby because it's all coming to a head right here in Queensland as well.
Well, remember I told you a couple of weeks ago about the semi-final where University, where I played for 18 years, are playing GPS, where I've coached for 12 years, and I had mixed emotions. On my chair at home, I'm carving up a T-shirt of Jeeps. I'm doing a half jersey, half T-shirt.
And you stand on the sideline.
Cass said, you're an old man who's an idiot. But this is, I I've got to divide my loyalties because it's a huge day at Ballymore on Sunday, all day long. Grand finals between all the clubs. We've actually got our old boss and now the boss of Queensland Rugby Union, Richard Barker. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Marto.
This is going to be a huge day.
It is. We've got grand finals on Saturday and Sunday, so grassroots football at Ballymore Park.
Is it a family kind of thing? Bring your kids down?
Oh, absolutely, Robin. So there'll be lots of activities, and if the young ones wear their club colours, there's also good pricing if they come with a paying adult too.
Robin, all the kids play footy on the backfield while the dads watch. I watched it happen a few weeks ago, and this is what happens. The mum drops everyone off, the kids play outside, they don't care less what's going on the field, they're just having fun, and the dads watch the footy all day. It's really tribal because it's your little community, whether you're an East guy or a Brothers guy or a Sunnybank guy or a Uni guy or a Norse guy or a Jeeps guy. No one gets angry, but it's in a tribal, Richard. They're like, it's beautiful to see.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And I think the last few weeks of finals, Marto, have shown that. Look, there's a couple of other good things too. I mean, it's 50 years of Ballymore we're celebrating. Oh, so we're bringing back as many of the players from the four teams that played back in 1967 between Teachers and West and Brothers and Uni. And we've got a number of the representatives of those guys, and they'll be featuring in the day.
Old blokes game?
Yeah, well, you never give too far away.
Oh, you two could run out. Marto and RB running out for Teachers. That'd be good fun, wouldn't it?
All the action kicks off on Saturday morning and runs through Sunday morning, where the Premier Grade starts at 3:15 with Prem Reserve at 1:05, Prem Colts at 11:20.
And then at 5:15, Marto will be doing his customary nudie run, which is going to be a lot of fun for everyone.
In a meeting yesterday, someone said to me, do you think Marto might want to come out and do some announcing?
No.
I said, Marto will be on that hill.
The hill, exactly.
He'll be doing some announcing, but the language is not for the loudspeaker.
I'll be there, and so a lot of other people. Thanks, Rich.
Thanks, guys.
Half price steaks and the Bledisloe Cup on the big screen. You can't beat that. TheNormanby.com.au.
Marto's pub tour on the river.
Yeah, there's some cynical people around. They're talking about this historic pub tour, and all I'm doing is trying to educate Brisbane, and people going, oh, I think you like beer a little bit too much.
Oh, no, shame on them.
You know what? It's an amazing day because it was such a successful day when we...
did it on a bus. You're taking it on a boat.
The bus tour, which was, 6 or 8 weeks ago, you all said it'll just be a beer-swilling fest. But the thing was... yes, it was. But everyone stopped at every pub and the owner came down and had these little historical speeches and took them around, chats. And it was like listening to Brad Thorne at a sportsman's lunch. No one spoke. Everyone was just dumbfounded about it.
Did they have beer in hand while...
Yeah,
admiring.
Normally the owner had bought them a free beer. That's so nice. The owners of historic pubs are better. Yes, all those emails, we will get to a tavern tour at some stage, but at this stage we're just doing historic pubs. And we're doing the regatta. We're all meeting at the regatta. We're then going the Story Bridge, the only one of these pubs that hasn't been flooded, of course, it's a little bit higher up.
Mm-hmm.
See history.
Wow. So impressed.
The Hamilton Hotel we're finishing at, and the whole night ends up, I know it's not on the river, but it's close. The Normanby Hotel to watch the Bledisloe Cup, and that's really what a night it's going to
be. Fantastic.
Breakfast Creek Hotel is third stop on my historic pubs. Just have a listen to some of the history.
The Breakfast Creek Hotel was built in 1889 in the French Renaissance style, popular at the time, which meant it stunk, was rude, and wore a beret. Built by a former Lord Mayor of Brisbane, William McNaughton Galloway, who hilariously died there falling out of a window drunk. Kids these days, eh? Anyway, his ghost apparently haunts the place today. Ooh! In the 1970s, Wharfies and Bob Hawke...
Any boss who sacks anyone for not turning up the day is a bum.
That bloke made the hotel director, Paddy Fitzgerald, keep serving beers off the wood instead of those new fandangled steel kegs. Huzzah! They then changed the name of the public bar to Paddy Fitzgerald's Bar. Really should be called Hawkey's Bar, shouldn't it? Its clientele was once described as a disparate yet harmonious blend of wharfies, coppers, lawyers, bookies, criminals and Labour Party identities. With those sorts of visitors and Gordon Tallis dropping in regularly, it may sound like a scary place to visit, but it's not. It's a Brisbane icon. And besides, how could you be scared of a place that serves icy cold beer and steak? together.
Oh, dripping in history. Speaking of steak, the Normanby half-price steaks.
When we get there,
when you get there for the Bledisloe Cup on the big screen, normanby.com.
Everyone's welcome at the Bledisloe Cup at the Normanby. It is the big one.
And what time will you be
there? I think Robin and I are doing pre-match analysis and halftime.
Oh, I hope so. Particularly as that's the last of the pubs on the list. Now, what time are you getting to that pub?
Getting to that pub about 7:30, Corday. So it's on it. Yeah, everybody, come on down to the Normanby and watch the Bledisloe together.
Mm-hmm. It is Marto, Ed and Robin on Brisbane's Triple M. I believe we've got an anonymous caller. Let's go to 133353. Who is this?
Hey, how you going? It's Stuart.
Robin's ex-boyfriend. Yes.
Hey, Robin, how are you?
Yeah, hi.
Are you the farmer, the guy who the harvesting machine?
Yeah, I'm just sitting on the harvester right now. I've got it on low. You know what I'm saying?
What? Low what?
It's on a low rumble, Robin. You know what I mean?
Sadly, I do.
Yeah. I woke up this morning and there was a little bit of hay on my pillow. It just reminded me of when you and I used to, take it down to the hay bales.
What was the song you and Stuart used to play?
That's right. It was boom, boom, boom. Let's go back to my harvester. That was the one. Yeah?
Yeah, that's the one.
That was it.
Yeah, that's right. And then Ice Baby. I actually think it might have been Stev's. Hey, listen.
What did you ring for, Stuart?
What are you up to tomorrow?
Why, Stu? You're in Bourke.
Yeah, I'm just following the driver of the harvester down. Got a full tank.
Right. Thanks, mate.
Good stuff, Stuart.
See you later.